Let's take a look at your house. Does it need some renovation or repair? Maybe it's got a water issue. Maybe you want to get it inspected for sale or just for your own well-being. I'll tell you what, Ken Adams, John Freiberger, our guest today, Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, our guests, as they come by every so often to talk with us about those home renovation issues. So if you have a question, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email at talk@wpr.org. Ken, nice to have you back.
It's always good to see you.
And John, great to see you again, too.
Glad to be here.
I tell you, you busy, you guys?
Yeah. We're entering the high point of the season, though, so yeah. Things have really changed since this last winter. In the winter, we were sitting around waiting for the mail, and now we're swamped. So yeah. I hope all the other contractors that may be listening are feeling it too. Yeah, I hope so.
John, you're as always
very busy. A lot of nice historic projects, including one on campus here now that will be on for the next 5 years.
Oh my goodness, which building?
Well, it's a large sorority house, a beautiful old Frank Riley house that is. The people are going to bite the bullet and do a wonderful restoration on it. You know, it's always great when we see some of these beautiful old homes where people want to bring them back to what they were when they were constructed, this one in 1928. So we will have a brightened star on Langdon Street.
Ah, that's wonderful.
Once we get done with it all.
Well, every line is filled, so let's go to the phones here and see what's on people's minds. Jessica in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jessica. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I just bought a house in Knoxville, Tennessee. It's an old historic house. It's about 100 years old. And one of the things that came up when we had the inspection was that we're going to need a new water heater. It's past the design life. A couple of other things were that we were going to need to do some stuff to the plumbing and the electrical work. And so in considering what types of water heaters to get, one of the things that I've been thinking about is trying to get an on-demand water heater. And I was just wondering what your opinions on that was and what the benefits, sort of the cost benefit of going tankless versus tanked water heaters.
Now, will this be a full-time house for you or a vacation?
It will be a full-time house there. I'm moving to Knoxville from Madison.
All right, Ken?
Well, historically, they've been used around the world to great success. Here in this country, we haven't really adopted to them yet, but they are considered a green product. They are the future. There's all kinds of them. I would recommend some of the better brands. I think Bosch is one. I think now Rheem makes one. That's a pretty good unit. And there are some new electric units that are point of use on demand water heaters that have really made some strides. I mean, they're as the price of gas goes up, the cost of electricity is getting more attractive, and they're actually in some cases less expensive to use. I recommend them as long as you get a good unit. Now I know there's been a lot of problems. John can talk probably in great lengths about it, but like I say, you get somebody that knows what they're doing to put them in. And if you have a good house, a good plumbing system, you'll be fine. Are you going to be remodeling the entire house, or are you going to just...
We're not doing any remodeling. What we're doing is we're redoing the plumbing. I guess they're putting the plastic pipes in underneath the house, and then we're all of the wiring from the light switches up was knob and tube, and so we're replacing all of that. So
you're upgrading your electrical
and some plumbing. So if you're upgrading the plumbing, make sure you have a plumber that knows a lot about tankless water heaters, otherwise they could maybe cause more problems than good.
Okay, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks so much for calling, appreciate your call. John, are you biting your tongue here?
Yeah, I'm waiting for John to jump in.
No, I agree with Ken. They are the wave of the future. We've had some quality control issues. And in some areas, we have incredibly hard water. And, of course, if you're not controlling the amount of lime in your water and you start getting a lot of scale buildup, you can certainly develop some problems.
Yeah.
But as Ken said, quality is what really counts here in having a system that's well thought out by a good, intelligent plumber. I am specifying them on some of our jobs.
Okay, there you have it. Let's go to Sarah in Wautoma. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I am concerned about our house. This past 2 years, we've had on our windows, we've had a little like mold on the wood frames.
Mildew, yeah.
And I'm wondering if we need to get that checked out for a deeper mold issue, or if we're safe just to clean it and go from there, knowing that our house is just really tight.
Go ahead.
Sarah, how old is your house?
5.5 years.
5.5 years. Okay, so you've got a thermal pane seal type unit in window
we have
unit
triple
in there.
E. Yeah, triple
E. Okay, so you've got good quality windows. It could be that your house is a bit on the damp side. What we have found is that if the interior humidity is about 40%, that when the window temperature gets down to about 35 degrees, you will get condensation. And even with these good windows that you have, they are at times going to reach that that dew point. They're going to become the first condensing surface. And the easiest way to control it is to lower the humidity level in the house. So the first thing to do is just go out and buy a decent humidistat and watch it and sort of see what the humidity is in your house in the winter. If it is high, there are several ways of taking care of it. One is to look for your sources of moisture, and they can be multiple. The University of Minnesota has a nice chart that they have published that you can figure out exactly how many pints of moisture go into the air in your house. And I can't remember which department it is, but I think if you just Google University of Minnesota moisture control, you will get something there. If you simply can't reduce the humidity easily, then what you may want to do is to try to diffuse the humidity by putting in a heat recovery vent system so that you have more air changes, because with a 5.5-year-old house, you may have very few air changes. And if your house is too tight, not only do you have high humidity, but you may have other things in the house, like higher levels of carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, various VOCs that you might want to get out of the air as well. So first, find out what your humidity levels are, and then figure out how to either control or lower them.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. Robin in Sheboygan Falls. On to you now. Hi, Robin.
Hello. Got an interesting question for everybody there. I have a 100-year-old farmhouse down in Indiana, and we are replacing the walls because they're billowing and bowing, being the plaster walls that they are. It's not pretty. But we're trying to decide if we should just drywall over those plaster walls or if we should actually knock them down and take the lath down and then just drywall from there.
You're talking about the interior walls, not the walls themselves, but the plaster that's on the walls. Okay.
Yeah, do not drywall over them.
No.
I don't know if you've ever carried a sheet of drywall into the house, but it is heavy. And just imagine carrying about 200 of them into your house and then hanging them places. And if you think your walls are bowing now, what they're going to do is they're going to start structurally bowing when you add all of that weight. There are ways of repairing old plaster unless it's really, really beat. Is this in such bad shape it's falling off the walls, or is it possibly repairable?
The years of paint over them is what's holding it down right now, I think. But there are some areas that are falling, and we're starting with a bedroom first because that's the smallest inconspicuous way and a good way to experiment.
Well, the other nice thing, Robin, if you take off the old lath and plaster before you put up new drywall or plaster, that's going to allow you to insulate, and you're also going to be able to put a vapor barrier on. And even in Indiana, which is a warmer climate than here, you do still need a vapor barrier because that is a heating climate. Plus, you're going to be able to rewire if you find breaches in the air barrier. You can foam those from the inside. So stripping it out room by room, you may be able to salvage the old trim, is going to give you a lot of benefits.
That's the other question. How do you get that old trim off when the nails are like 4 or 5 inches thick without damaging it?
Well, you get somebody else to do it. That's the easiest way. No, but you have to get a little flat pry bar underneath, and you slowly tap it in, ease it you know, ease it out a little bit, put another bar next to it, ease it, and then eventually it should come out fairly easily after a while. Then when you want to pull the nails, I would use what's called an end cutter, and it looks sort of like a Jaws type pair of pliers, and
all
you
right,
just grab
we have
it
one of those, and you so that's good.
And you and you pull them through from the back, so you don't try to hammer them out because then you'll split the wood. You can, but they're usually finished nails. You can pull them right through the wood. It takes a little bit of work. That's like I say, it's something that's great work for a 16-year-old boy. burn up some calories.
One thing to do, Robin, before you play too much with that trim is determine if it's got a lot of lead paint on it.
Good point, yeah.
And if it is, and if it isn't a real spectacular trim, you know, like a beautiful four-part Italianate molding, you might want to just have a local woodworker copy it in new wood for you. That may end up being a whole lot less financial burden than taking this wood out. The paint's going to pop off, and then you find it's lead, and then you strip it all.
Mm-hmm.
Could be double the cost to save it. Obviously, if it's something of historic value, you're going to want to save it. But there's wonderful catalogs that you can get Victorian trim from, and if it's 100-year-old, it's probably a Victorian or Edwardian house.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there you have it.
Thank you very much. Helped an argument between the other half.
Uh-oh. I didn't want to get in the middle of that.
Thanks, Robin. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Joe in Franklin next. Joe, hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
Have a deck with one board that's warped on the end. It's pulled the screws up. And, of course, it's right at the entrance to the deck, right in the middle. Can that be screwed back down? Will that pull the board down, or am I going to have to replace the board?
Is it a treated lumber, green treated?
I don't know.
Yeah, it might be. It most likely would be if it's twisting and warping like that on you. If it's not rotted, you could try screwing it down with deck screws, and if that doesn't work, you'll have to replace it. It's pretty straightforward. If it can be pulled in, it will happily do so. Another thing you might be able to do is pull the board off. Do you have a power saw, hand power saw or a table saw?
Yes.
You could make a couple of saw kerfs on the bottom side of that, and sometimes that'll help keep it from twisting a little bit, but usually that helps more with cupping, but If you can screw it in and it pulls down, great. If it doesn't work, then you'll need to replace it.
Yeah.
Are deck screws a standard size, or how long should I go?
Well, your decking's what, probably an inch thick?
Probably.
Yeah, so you'd want to go into the floor joists, maybe another inch and a half to 2 inches. So a 2.5-inch screw, 3-inch screw would be perfect.
Okay, and diameter, or just is deck screw pretty much a standard screw?
Yeah, it's pretty standard.
It's pretty standard, or size 10. You can go to your local hardware store and tell them you need some deck screws, something that's going to hold up to the weather. You don't want to use drywall screws. They're not made to handle moisture.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you much.
Yep, thanks much for calling. Cassandra emailed us and wonders, is there an effective way to insulate the walls of a stucco-sided home? I've been told that blow or spray an type of insulating cannot be done when you're dealing with stucco. Is this accurate? The house was built around 1920. Of course, this means there was really not much in the way of insulation done at the time of construction.
You can blow into stucco houses, but it's better to try to do it from the inside than the outside. Stucco from the 1920s is going to be a lime and Portland base, probably a sand and gravel stucco. It is pretty soft. And it most likely is put on wood lath, and it's very difficult to drill and very easy to damage. The other thing with stucco houses that's absolutely essential if you insulate the walls is you have to put a vapor barrier on, because otherwise what happens is the stucco, especially if it happens to be a metal lath stucco, becomes damaged by condensation. So it's a house where I think Cassandra really wants to have a good insulation or old house expert come and look at it and give her some direction.
One thing that we've done is we'll blow in from the inside, and they use a smaller tube, higher pressure hose to blow in cellulose. And we'll put two small holes in, two 1-inch diameter holes, one on the top of each wall cavity and one on the bottom. and blow that in, and then all we have to do is patch a small amount of area. Sometimes the bottom hole can actually be behind the baseboard, and then paint the walls with a vapor barrier paint, and you've got your vapor barrier.
Right. That's the same system we usually recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, I want to add one little thing for Sarah, who called from Wautoma earlier.
Yeah.
The source for the moisture sourcing chart is from the Cold Climate Housing Information Center at the University of Minnesota.
Okay.
They have a lot of really good information up there. Minnesota's even colder than here, so they really have done a lot of studies on condensation. This even relates a little bit to Cassandra's question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's the Cold Climate Housing Information Center
at the University of Minnesota.
Okay. There you have it. Let's go to Adam in Milwaukee now. Adam, hello.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great.
Great.
Great. I was talking to your screener first, I'm in the market looking for a new house. Not necessarily a brand new house, but I'm not looking to have it built, but I'm looking for something that's already on the market, but a newer house, mm-hmm. and wondering whether there is a website, a singular website where all the builders, you know, put up their new construction for sale.
I don't know about that, but most of them work with realtors, and realtors will have the MLS book. And so if you can work with a buyer's realtor, you might be able to have access to the book. You could do some web searches, and maybe you'll get lucky. Do you know any sites, John?
Well, MLS is online, but often to access it, you've got to sign up with Smith Realty or something.
Yeah.
And that will assure you, Adam, that your email box will never be empty. Because you will receive more information about houses than you thought there were houses in Milwaukee. But that may be a way. You maybe just need to find a broker you can work with and give them the parameters that you're interested in, you know, south side, west side, size. They'll search the sites for you.
If you work with a good realtor that's really working for you, and that's why they have buyer's agreements, you set up a buyer's agreement with your realtor. And if that guy or woman is good, they will do so much work for you. They really can be beneficial.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Good luck. Good luck to you.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling.
Call us back when you get a new house and we'll talk about it.
There'll probably be problems to talk about. Let's Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, our guests as we talk home renovation and repair issues. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Home renovation and repair on our minds today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guests Ken Adams and John Freiberger. We'll take some more calls. Bill in Kalamazoo, Michigan, you are up next. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi, folks. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I have a couple of insulation questions. First of all, the exterior walls, when the siding was replaced, I saw that they were a black wafer board sort of stuff, sort of fiberboard.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The old Celotex asphalt impregnated sheathing.
Okay. Is there any insulative value to that?
Yes, there is.
It's
about greater? It's about R3 per inch.
So it's about equal to, say, styrofoam panels.
No, it's
no.
about half. I think.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Half to roughly half. Right.
Because I was considering, I'm willing to do the work. I was considering pulling the siding off one wall at a time and replacing those panels to help upgrade the insulation, which seems they're only 3.5-inch walls, and there is fiberglass bat insulation installed, but tearing the inside walls out is a whole lot of work.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, thinking it might be easier if I could just do that, but I wasn't sure if there would be any great benefit to it.
Bill, are you re-siding the entire house?
It's already been done about 10 years ago, but I'm willing to take it off and replace those panels and put it up one wall at a time. It wouldn't be like a wholesale effort.
Is it a vinyl siding?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Bill, I think what you want to take a look at, first take a look at the tax credits, see if the government will pay 30% of your project for you.
Wow.
In 2009. The other thing to take a look at is I think you probably want to talk to an energy auditor and try to get, you can figure out the cost because you're going to do it yourself, but I think the thing to do is probably just leave that wafer board on and then add foam over the top of it on the exterior and then put on a good wind and water barrier, Tyvek is something you can work with easily. Tyvek has a great downloadable how to install it correctly installation manual. But make sure you've actually got a good payback. Check your attic insulation, check the efficiency of your furnace, check for bad air leaks in the house. Do all of those things first. You might find that if you tighten up the house and do other things, that your payback for doing all of this hard siding work when you could really be out fishing is going to be like 35 years, and then it's not going to be worth it. But check Kalamazoo, see if you can find some energy consultants who will come out, take a look at your house, maybe do a blower door test on it. How old is the house, Bill?
It was built in 59 and 60. It's a duplex, and I've already replaced the windows, the doors, and put the highest efficiency furnaces I could get at the time in there.
Mm-hmm.
It used to have hydronic heat with no air conditioning, so it's a duplex.
Yeah, and check the attic insulation. Houses from that period, that's pre-1972, so... You know, fuel oil was 15 cents a gallon. So those houses tend to be very leaky through the ceilings, especially if you have old recessed can lights, things like that in there.
Okay, I don't have any of that. One thing, I've been up in the attic any number of times, and what has happened is they laid a layer of craft paper-backed insulation down. But then at some point later, they added a second layer of craft-based insulation on top of that. So you've got ceiling, fiberglass, craft paper.
Not a good system.
I was wondering about, you know, water vapor and things like that, whether that was something I should maybe considering for long life, you know, although it's been there since 1960 and nothing's fallen apart yet.
Well, take a look at it. If the house may be, you know, the thing is you're tightening up the house now. So back in the old days, before you put in those nice new windows, that house had a lot of air changes and the humidity is pretty low. Now that you're tightening up, the humidity is going to get higher. Without seeing the house, Bill, I think what I would suggest you do is leave that first layer down with the craft paper, take off the second layer, and then maybe put cellulose in there to perhaps R50, at least R44, and make sure you've got good soffit venting, roof venting, and those things done before you insulate. By the time you do all of that, I think your heating bills are going to be so low that that the siding project may not have a real good payback.
Okay, yeah, the attic has a ridge vent, plus I have three barn turbine vents up there. And right. I have soffit openings, 6x9 soffit openings, about every 8 feet.
That's really good. I have to say, I'm with John with the energy audit. If you can find a good energy audit here in Wisconsin, we have a focus on energy. I'm not sure what you have in Michigan, but I'm sure that if you do a web search, an energy audit web search, I'm sure you've got something there, and that's a great place to start. They will give you invaluable information on the smartest ways to improve the insulating value of your house. And the good news with that is that there will be some federal government tax breaks for that work. I think, John, 30% up to...
I believe that. I believe that is.
30% up to $3,000 or something like that. It's a pretty good chunk of change.
Right.
So, yeah, and that's good through 2010.
Oh, and Bill, just one other thing about that old Celotex sheathing. That actually is structural. That is keeping your house from racking, and it's helping to brace the walls. So if you take it off, you can't just replace it with foam. You would actually probably need to have a structural engineer look at the house. So I really think you need to keep that old Celotex sheathing on there for the structural integrity of the house. If you do insulate on the outside, go over it.
Okay.
And I just went online and took a look, and I believe there's a Focus on Energy program in Michigan, which you might want to check in on.
Okay, just Google Focus on Energy.
Focus on Energy Michigan.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right, well, gentlemen, thank you all very much. I appreciate your help. You gave me a good sense of direction there.
Thanks for calling, Bill.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, for a couple $100, you can get some really good information from those folks. For Joe and Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show. It's terrific.
Thanks.
I had a quick comment about the person who called in with the old farmhouse who was working on the bowed walls, and I appreciate your encouragement to have them pay attention to the fact there may be lead on those older buildings. And working for the state of Wisconsin, as I do, I worked on lead poisoning. I just want to thank you for that, because we've had really good results with replacing old trim and old wooden components in terms of reducing lead levels. And it's a much safer way to go than trying to strip the paint off. So I really thank you for that. I couldn't have said it better.
Oh, perfect.
And I just wanted to add one little point that I think we're in a kind of a changing environment now. The construction industry is going to have to take training for basically anybody who works in an older dwelling is going to be required to have a day's training. And I think that'll really help improve the public awareness about lead in general, because in the past, it's only been people who said they were doing abatement that have been required to do training, and other people who might be doing similar work, just not calling it abatement, didn't necessarily have to take the same level of precautions, and now everybody will be kind of on the same page.
Yeah, right.
So I think that's coming up in October of 2009, and people want more information, just search for WI lead. And we've got a lot of good stuff on the website.
Joe, this is unusual. Let me turn the tables on you. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How much experience have you had with finding lead in varnish?
Oh, quite a bit. We actually had a research project here that we got a HUD-funded research project, and we found lead in varnish in pretty much the majority of the older dwellings that we investigated. We were looking at floors. We had a contractor here in Madison who was looking at safe ways to remove leaded varnish from floors. And we found there were some pretty effective ways to do that. The lead levels in varnish are much lower than they are in paint.
Yes, but I was surprised at how much I've found when we've tested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's certainly when you do sanding, you know, you can generate a pretty good level of lead dust that could be a problem for the occupants and the workers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
And stairs in particular are a problem because it's hard to control the dust on a stair.
Yeah, and Larry, I mention this because most people think lead paint.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think lead varnish,
mm-hmm.
and so you get people in their houses refinishing their woodwork, and they're actually inhaling a lot of lead dust working on their varnish.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who's doing significant refinishing really needs to do a little bit of testing.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Joe. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. We'll have to get Joe on the program sometime. Mm-hmm. Talk about more
sure.
about lead. We'll do a show on lead one of these days. Josh and Hayward, we're on to you now. Hi, Josh.
Hi, guys. Always enjoy listening to your program. I tried to call last time, and we ran out of time. I got a really good resource for restoration products. It's a company called Van Dykes. It's spelled V-A-N-D-Y-K-E-S, and they have a website, www.vandykes.com. It's Cabela's company, I believe.
Right.
And they have everything from the hinges for Hoosiers to carved molding for Victorian-type homes. It's a really great mm-hmm. resource.
Lots of hardware. And all you yep. have to do, if you order from them once, you will get a catalog. You'll get enough of them in a year to heat your house.
That's right. Yeah, you can't keep the wood stove going. And then I had a quick question about a foundation. I always listen diligently. I bought a spec house, and I've got a kind of a twist on a block foundation here. The house is in barren. The soil's well drained, and I'm working on getting gutters on. I kind of have an idea about that, and sloping the terrain away and all that. And the foundation doesn't really leak too bad. There's a few little seepage spots, and I thought I could just kind of grind at those and put some patch on them. But what they did here at some point. And I've never seen this before. It looks to me like they took like a drywall mud and stuccoed over the concrete block. There's a concrete skim coat over the block, and then they put this drywall mud, probably a quarter inch thick or whatever, and then they painted it with what looks like the vinyl, water sealing paint. And surprisingly, I guess because it's so dry around the house, it's held up fairly well. Except for a few of the little spots that seep, and there's a little bit of mold that wants to grow in those spots because of that drywall mud. Short of grinding all of that off, should I just patch it the way they have it and go over it with the ceiling paint and hope for the best? Or
wow, what do you think? well, what do you think there, John?
Well, it sounds like they used every product that they shouldn't have used.
Yeah. No, I've looked at a lot of stuff like this, and this one's got me flummoxed for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that your basement's relatively dry, Josh, because as you mentioned, a lot of the stuff can indeed grow mold. I think at this point, just patch it with things that are silicate-based, and if you do paint it, maybe use a silicate-type paint. Do a test spot first. You can use something like ThoroSeal. and that will not grow. That will not grow fungal. It sounds like you're doing what you can do. I mean, obviously, removing the whole thing is just way more work than we want to think about.
Yeah, it's a dusty mess. We ground just a little patch off, you know, the one area, and it makes quite the dust storm.
I'm sure it does. Well, good luck, Josh.
All right, silica base. I appreciate that.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Pam in Appleton has a question for you guys. Pam, hello.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a synthetic stucco exterior on our house.
Okay.
Dragvit, I guess, is one of the brand names of it.
Mm-hmm.
The house was built in 1996. We purchased it when it was about 2.5 years old. And last fall, we learned, very unhappily, that the windows had been installed improperly for this kind of exterior. And because it makes the house so airtight, water got in the walls and rotted out around the windows.
Oh.
We'll let John talk about this because he runs into this a lot.
Yeah. Ken's doing his imitation of a bulldozer here.
No, it's not that bad. Don't be too frightened.
Yeah, these exterior insulation finish systems that were put on in the 80s and 90s have about a 90% failure rate.
Yeah.
They have gotten better the last few years, but even the improved systems that are back drained generally don't get applied well. You really need to talk to an exterior insulation finish system specialist who can come up and analyze your home, and you need to do that quickly because you can get very significant structural damage. Now, there is a certification program they're called EIFS inspectors. We have one person with our company certified, but I'm sure there are people in Appleton. But find an EIFS certified EIFS inspector and have them out to the house to evaluate the problems. In most cases, what we have done is we've simply removed all of the product and we've replaced it.
EIFS, by the way, is exterior insulation
finish system. Yeah.
EIFS, it looks like.
Yeah, we're in the process of replacing every single window in the house. At great expense.
Yeah.
And we had a moisture inspector last fall who was a certified moisture inspector from here in the state. And he determined where there was moisture. It's mostly beneath the windows,
mm-hmm.
A little bit to the side of either window. And what we're having done is it's being replaced by real stucco as opposed to it's being patched with real stucco. Is that kind of the way to go?
Real stucco moves differently than EIFS.
Okay.
And so you're going to end up with some cracking problems. Real stucco is very, very much superior to EIFS, but real stucco needs to be put on as a back drain system as well. So I think you really need to get some advice from, as I said before, from an EIFS inspector. The system is 13 years old now,
yeah.
And you want to make sure that you get all of the problems cured. Usually we find multiple problems. The windows and doors generally are almost always a problem. But we do find other things on the house. Looking for the number and placement of expansion joints can make a difference. Looking at where the roof flashings and the fascias and soffits meet the eaves is important to look at. So
okay.
Get a little bit of professional help on it so that when you fix it, it's really fixed forever.
Oh, okay.
All right. There you have it. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Pam. An email from Sue from Burlington, Wisconsin. I have a 25-year-old home with cedar siding. It needs to be painted every 5 years. It's rotting, and the bugs and woodpeckers love living in it. Help! We'd really like to get a concrete siding product that lasts virtually forever and never needs painting. We've been shopping but have not found such a perfect product. All the warranties are very limited on the finish. And with the Wisconsin winters, we're concerned about fading, cracking, and so forth. Do you know of a product with a local installer that you could recommend?
Well, I can't help you with a local installer, but I can help you with products. There's a lot of cement board products. I think CertainTeed is one, Hardy System. from James Hardy's another. There's, I think, four or five other ones out there now. They usually, for their factory-painted finishes, usually have between a 15- and 20-year warranty. That's outstanding. You're not going to find any painted product that's going to have a better warranty unless it's been powder-coated aluminum or something like that. So if you're going to replace your siding, you can do it with cement board. One thing I would recommend, and I know John would recommend, he was just talking about it to the last caller, is having something that will allow air to move behind it. The system that we normally do is called a rain screen system, and that basically separates the siding from the finish, from the interior wall of the house, and allows air to move behind it. It's a little tricky. You got to make sure bugs can't get in there, and that's why the screening is applied top and bottom. But if you can find both of the, you know, find a product that you like their factory color, you'll get the best warranty. Some of these companies will paint a custom color and offer a less warranty, like a 10 or 15 year warranty.
That's what we got.
I think so, yeah, because Larry's house has a custom color on it, and rain screen system.
Yeah.
And, you know, you should get a real good life out of that system.
Yeah, it looks great so far for a couple of years now.
It's 2 or 3 years old, yeah. And it looks still only looks brand new.
Yeah, it looks brand new.
But you will end up painting it eventually. When it comes to doing the work, a couple things you can do to arm yourself is you can go to the, I think it's called JLC Online website. It's the Journal of Light Construction. They have an article that was done about 5 years ago. You can research their old articles, and it was done for contractors on doing rain screen systems, and it's just got a really nice, easy to understand methodology. And you can print off copies of the photographs that are in that article. Looks like John's ready to jump in with a couple more things too, and he knows a lot more about this than I do, because he helped educate me on these products. But JLC is a great place to start, and ask contractors that you're having price this for you to give you their information on rain screen systems. Rain screen system is the term that they should know. If they don't know anything about it, I don't think you'd want to talk to them in too much detail. It's going to be a little more expensive. You'll be really happy in the long run.
Yeah. Anything to add there, John?
Well, I completely agree with Ken. Rain screen systems are great. It's the one way that you can put cedar siding on a house and actually have it last a really long time. And, of course, it's wonderful with cement board. Mm-hmm. The only other thing I'd have Sue do is go to both Hardy and go to CertainTeed.
Oh, sure, of course.
And download the installation instructions, because we find 90% of the cement board siding is not put onto manufacturer's instructions, including by good professional siders.
And it's fun bathroom reading.
They do not read the instructions. And there are some things to look at. If your siding is only 3 or 4 inches off the grade, you will not get a warranty from either of those manufacturers, because you have to be 6 inches up. So read the instructions first and see whether cement board will indeed work for you. And if not, do cedar with the rain screen.
Yep, there you have it. Thanks very much for calling. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting in Fitchburg, our guest today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Really looking forward to being at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair. It is next week, as you just heard me talking there a little bit about it. It's a great fair, and boy, will be lots of us up there. Gene Faraca, myself, Ben Marins will be there, and we'll be doing our program. Veronica Rickert's also got a show there, and we'll be doing our programming for most of the day up there. And great place to go. Have you guys ever visited the MREA fair?
I have not.
I've never been there, but I'm going this year.
Are you? Well,
yeah, I'll be up there. The 19th is Saturday, isn't it? I think I'll be up there on Sunday.
We'll be broadcasting from live, and I hope, gosh, if you're coming up and you're going to be there on Friday, please stop by our tent. We've got a tent set up, and we'll be broadcasting a nice audience, I hope, and should be a lot of fun. Paul in Grafton has a question for you. Paul, hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have an older house, about 45 years old, that is hydronic and radiator heat, so we don't have central air conditioning. But we're lucky in that we live in the lowest spot in the neighborhood, so on a cool evening, all the cool air in the neighborhood collects in our yard.
Mm-hmm.
So we put a whole house fan a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and it used to work great. On a night with cool air, we could cool the house a good 20 degrees in 30 minutes with that thing. But then we had a new roof put on a few years ago. And the roofer said he took off all of the vents that we had, the exhaust vents, and put on just a single ridge vent of about 30 feet in length. And since then, that fan just doesn't work at all. And I'm guessing there's just not enough exhaust area.
That's right.
So, and he keeps swearing it's enough, so he won't come back and fix it. So I'm looking at putting in some solar-powered roof ventilators.
No, that's not needed. All you need is to put in, what size, do you know what size fan you have?
It's about 3,600 cubic feet per minute.
Oh, it's a pretty good blow then.
And in the manual it says you want about 5 square feet of effective opening.
That's about right. So you could, you can calculate that between your soffit vents and your ridge vent. I'm sure you're probably about halfway there. And so
it's supposed to be high opening, though.
Yeah, oh, that's so right. That's high opening. So yeah. You probably need one or two big, just large vents. You know, the standard roof vent that you see on a house that's it looks like it's about 16 inches square and it's flat top, that's only about 64 square inches of opening.
Yeah, we had about 5 vents in before he took them all out.
So you'll need to put I'm just going to, off the top of my head, say you probably need to put 3 of those back or a couple of bigger units.
Okay.
Maybe 2 big ones.
But you don't think a powered fan is necessary?
Go ahead, John.
No, I don't think so. Okay, first you're undervented. Your roof does not meet code. Your roofer was wrong. The ridge venting, all the ridge venting I've seen has between 16 and 19 net square inches of opening per lineal foot. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's 19, which would be like GAF snow country. That would only give you 570 inches of opening. Now, that's enough for about a 600-square-foot house, and I'll bet your house is bigger than that, Paul.
Yeah, we're bigger than that.
Yeah, so your roofer did the roof wrong. He needs to come back and at least install the amount of venting so that it meets code, which means you need a foot of opening for every 300 feet of house. So, in other words, if you've got an 1,800-square-foot house, divide that by 300, you need 5 square feet of net opening.
That's six.
Yeah. Six, you're right. Six.
He ran out of fingers.
Ran out of fingers. Yeah, well.
You need 6 square feet.
Yep. I can't do math with mittens on. So, and that would give you enough opening also for your fan. So I think check the Uniform Dwelling Code, which you can look up online. I think it's chapter 22 or chapter 23 on roof venting. Quote that to your roofer, ask him to come back and provide adequate roofing, because I'm sure his contract said it would be done in a good and workmanlike manner, and that means to code.
All right.
Okay.
There you have it. Thanks a lot for calling, Paul.
Sure.
And let's see. Let's take another email here from Janet this time. We're considering buying a house with damage to the north wall brick exterior. The wall seems to curve outward slightly, and there are many step cracks along the side. In the basement below, there's a long horizontal crack that runs the length of the wall in the basement block. The basement crack is about 2 feet below the ceiling. They have not had an inspection yet, and we will take the advice to get a structural engineer if needed. Yep. I'm wondering if you can talk about brick construction and movement in relationship to cost to fix this type of damage. We're young, and this would be our second home. I'm worried about how much I would have to invest in the structure.
Probably quite a bit. Mm-hmm. What is probably happening here is this is a concrete masonry unit or concrete block foundation. It's been frost heaved, which is why it has a long horizontal crack. That means that the top of the wall is rotating into the basement. If it's a masonry exterior and there's a brick ledge, that means that brick ledge is now tipped, so it's trying to tip the brick veneer away from the house. So it is basically prying on the brick veneer. So what you're looking at there is probably taking all the brick veneer off that side of the house and replacing it, plus repairs to the basement. If there is more than about 3/4 inch of movement in that wall, you're probably looking at replacing that side of the wall or at least putting in flexural members. So, yes.
And that's the best case scenario.
That's the best case scenario. Yeah, so you do indeed need a structural engineer to look at that. These can be fixed in the current market. They aren't even all that difficult to fix. We recently did one here in Madison where I think it was only about $3,000 to replace the entire front wall on a ranch house, including all the excavation work. So what you may be able to do is get a scope of work designed by the engineer, price it out, and work out something with the seller so that when you move in the house, you've got good brick veneer and you've got a good foundation wall, a good replacement foundation wall in that area.
Lillian in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Lillian.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you, Larry, for your very informational programs that you have every day.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
I really appreciate them. We rebuilt our deck a couple of weeks ago, and we used pre-treated lumber on it. And I'm wondering what would be the best way to handle that. Someone suggested that we should just let it weather, but I really like the look of the new wood, and I'd kind of like to preserve that. What would be your suggestion?
Is it green-treated lumber? Is that what you're saying?
It's pre-treated.
Pre-treated, so...
So, and what color is the wood grain? Does it have a color to it other than... Or is it brown, or is it green? Is it...
It has a greenish color to it, especially like when it rains and it's wet, it looks green.
And how long have you had it on?
It was finished on May 21st, so it's just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, typically what we do is let them sit for the summer at least before we put a stain on or a sealer of any kind. John, help me out with this because, you know, a lot of times on horizontal surfaces, green treated lumber, it's going to either peel if it's paint or just the stain is going to just get pushed out because the wood is moist and it holds water unevenly.
Yeah, there's a variety of problems. The other problem, Ken, I think that we're always running into is since they've made illegal a lot of the old treatments, we have all kinds of new treatments.
That's true.
And some of them we don't know anything about. Now, one possible way of getting some information is going to the American Wood Products Association. It's awpa.com is their website. They are a nonprofit that does testing of treated wood. And they have a lot of information on the website about the efficacy of different treatments. And that may be a place to start because it could be one of at least four or five different current green treatments. And they may have different characteristics. There's also some treatments out there that there's one, what's it called, micron copper treatment. I don't know if you've heard of that one, Ken.
I've heard of something like that for the bottoms of sailboats. Micron is the...
What I've been able to find so far is that there's absolutely no scientific evidence that it works. So I think maybe start with American Wood Products Association first. There should be a label on the wood that says what it is, or call whoever built the deck and get the name of the lumber yard and ask them what kind of treatment it is, then go to awpa.com, see if you can get some information there. And if that doesn't help, then get online to the Forest Products Lab here in Madison and ask them. But you're going to have the information to know what type of chemical is in that wood before they can give you good advice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
So you would suggest leaving it for one summer. Well, find out what the wood is or what it was treated with.
Yeah,
and go from there.
I would think whoever you bought it from should know.
Yes,
we bought it from Home Depot.
Well, they should know.
So we should be able to find that out.
Yep.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Yep, thanks for calling, Lillian.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Mark in Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have a cold living room.
Okay.
And I have a 30-year-old ranch-style home, hydronic heat. The system has two zones. And I've adjusted the zone valve twice to obviously get more heat in that zone, and it does not help. Mm. The room is approximately 20 by 15 and has a large 9-panel Semco window that faces the north.
That's probably the source of your problem.
Yeah.
How old is the house, you said?
30 years old.
30 years old.
The window unit is about 10 feet by 5 feet. It's pretty big.
And was this an original window?
Yes.
I would consider replacing that window. because that Semco, especially in that time frame, had you know, they were sort of a modest window, and there's been a lot of improvements in the quality of windows since that window was put in. That will probably help dramatically, because it's kind of like turning the heat up and opening a window. You're sort of with that much glass in there, you've got so much heat loss that you know, it's going to be hard to keep up with any system.
So will I lose my view? Do we have to go to a smaller?
No. You don't have to go to smaller windows, but you can get. Let's see. If you look at, you can go to Marvin's website. Marvin Windows makes great, very high efficient windows.
Yeah, the 366 thermal unit, I think is their best right now.
Their integrity line is a line that has fiberglass exterior extrusions and has a little better insulating value, but they have limited sizes.
Mm-hmm.
I think Anderson's really stepping up now, aren't they? John, do you know much about Anderson's?
We'll have to ponder that.
Good luck to you. Good quality windows.
Thanks very much for that call. We'll think about that and talk some more after a quick look at the news here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Looking at home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues with our two guests, Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, our two guests. Mark in Muscadet has been waiting a while, so we'll go right to Mark here with a question. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. We bought our house in the fall of 94 and had a new roof put on it in the summer of 95, stripped all the shingles off and had a company do it. And now I've been on the roof for the last fall and then the spring, and the shingles are on the south side, they're peeling up really bad, and they're cracked even on the north side, in very, very bad condition on the south side. It's only, you know, 15 years.
Well,
it's a good bad shingle.
It's a good possibility that your roofer put on a 15-year shingle,
because
back I think it was 97 that they changed the code that we had to put at least a 20-year shingle on. So it's possible that he put on a 15-year shingle and it's lived its life.
Well, timing is right then, huh?
So I mean, there's also other possibilities. You have inadequate ventilation. Were there trees rubbing against the house, tree limbs or, you know, branches?
No.
I would check your ventilation before you re-roof it, but that would be my first guess. I'd have to see it to know for sure. Anything you want to ask?
Well, John? The other thing, Mark, we have seen shingles that have just plain failed. Globe had some shingles that were bad as short ago as 9 years ago. Elk at one time had a problem with their architectural grade shingles, which they certainly took
they
care
fixed
of quickly.
That, yeah.
If you know what the shingles are, you may want to check. You may want to call the manufacturer. If they're like a CertainTeed or something with a 25-year life, you may want to call them and have the factory come out and look at them, because most of the factories are really quite good about honoring material warranties. We found in almost every case, unless the company's gone bankrupt, the manufacturer will come out and they will at least give you the new shingles. They're not going to put them on for you.
Or you'll get something prorated maybe and
right.
Save you a couple bucks.
So do a little bit of investigation just in case it happens to be a defective product. Because from what you're describing, were they just curling, I think Ken would be correct to really focus on the attic. And you should always look at the attic and make sure it's not too wet or too hot. But do check the possibility that you just plain got a lemon product as well.
All right.
Because we did put ridge vents on everything.
Good.
And so I think the venting is good. I will do some research on the type of shingle it is, and thank you for your help.
Good luck to you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Bonnie in Madison. Has hardwood floors under carpeting in her 80-year-old bungalow. They look beautiful where I pulled up the carpet on the stairway. I was planning to take my time and do it myself, but now I just learned that family from our state will be visiting next month. My question is, are there people or companies who both pull up carpeting and refinish floors? About how long would it take and how much lead time does it one usually needs? P.S. I have a cat with feline asthma. Would it be a good idea to get her or other pets out of the house while the work is being done?
Well, let's start with your last question first. Yes, I would get the cat out for a couple reasons. Cats really don't react well to really super loud noises, which the refinishing would cause. But you may find a hardwood floor installer that would be willing to pull up the carpeting and inspect it. Chances are you'd probably want to find a handyman that would do that for you. There's some wood that has to be some nailing fins that have to be pulled up after the carpet comes out, and then finding a hardwood floor installer that can do it in how long did you say it was? It's a couple weeks. It's going to be virtually impossible. You'd probably want to wait till after your company leaves.
Yeah, that would. It's going to be very hard. I suppose you could check.
Yeah, you could check. There might be somebody that's got a hole in their schedule that could squeeze it in. Another thing you want to do is ask whoever's finishing it, whoever would be refinishing the floor, what products they use on the floor, and how they're going to collect the dust. Some companies in town have HEPA filters that they will be very, very good about cleaning the dust up in the house, and other companies are old fashioned and, you know, just say, well, that's the way it is. It's dusty.
Joe also reminded us about lead in old varnish. And here we have 1920s varnish, where if it was really good quality varnish, probably has some lead in it.
Probably does. And so you want to have somebody that knows what they're doing to do it.
Yep. There you have it. And Joey has looking to buy a home in the next few months, wondering if there are people who do both energy audit and home inspections all in one visit. What do you think there, John?
There are building inspectors who are quite knowledgeable. There may be a couple who know as much as like John Viner, but I'm not sure that there really are. Certainly, most building inspectors are going to be able to give you basic information about how much insulation you have, how much venting you have, the efficiency of your furnace, some general comments on the windows. And they may have some specific suggestions as to where to go next as far as seeking some expert advice. So start with the building inspector. And remember, walk through with your building inspector and ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
When I do an inspection, I pretty much talk nonstop for 2 to 3 hours. And I tell people, if I fall silent, fill that silence with a question. Get your money's
worth.
That
rare moment that you fall silent.
That's right. Go ahead.
Just to add that the inspector probably won't be able to do a blower door test, and I've also seen that there are quite a few people that have these infrared cameras that don't really know how to use them. So make sure if you're going to do a pressure test in your house that you have somebody that knows their stuff.
Kathy says that her farmhouse is 99 years old, and the cement asbestos siding is going to be left in place and covered with a layer of insulation and new siding. Cellulose will also be blown into the walls from the outside. Would you compare and contrast fiber cement siding versus steel?
First things first, Kathy, no, you're not going to do that. Because the siding that you have on there contains asbestos, and if you try to nail through it, it will shatter, and if you drill it, you will create friable asbestos. So you really do need to take that off, or you are going to have a little bit of EPA sort of problems.
Yes,
it's illegal, just by law.
By law.
Yes. You could end up with some very serious problems if we end up with asbestos dust or asbestos fragments in the soil around your house. So I'm not sure who you're talking to as a contractor, but I think you may want to get a second opinion.
The good news about asbestos siding abatement is it's not as expensive as it was 25 years ago.
That's correct, Ken. Unless the siding has really weathered, it's considered to be non-friable, and you would have to check with your locality. But some localities, you are allowed to double bag it, and they will simply put it into the regular landfill rather than haul it to the sort of a landfill you have to use for friable asbestos. So it isn't all that difficult to take it off. Why somebody would try to nail through it, I really have no idea. So I'm a little bit worried about the advice that you're getting. Second part of her question, Larry, was really comparing steel siding, fiberboard siding,
with cement.
And cement siding. Ken, weigh in here. I think of them, I would go with the cement board siding as something that is going to last longer, is less likely to be damaged, is easier to replace partially if it is damaged. What's your thoughts?
I agree exactly. I mean, you said it all pretty much. I like steel for durability. It does not last as long. It doesn't look as good as long as fiber cement board siding that's properly installed would be. The fiber siding, are you talking about, do you think she's speaking about the
Georgia-Pacific interseal or something like that, perhaps?
Yeah, Louisiana-Pacific, I think.
Or is it Louisiana-Pacific, yeah.
They say that they've come around, and I'm skeptical because it's got a wafer board back, and wafer board is not very moisture-friendly, and if it does get moist, you could have problems. So the jury's still out on that. I'm with John. I go for fiber cement. Definitely do not try to leave that asbestos siding on the wall.
There you have it. Good thing you emailed. Let's go to Steve in Milwaukee. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, gentlemen. My wife and I live in a house recently moved into. It's over 100 years old. It has a sidewalk poured down the length of one of the sides of the building. And where it abuts the foundation, I had noticed some water in the basement after a heavy rain. I then took out the Celotex expansion joints that were up against the building. And in my inimitable wisdom, I filled in the cracks with a vinyl-based concrete patch. That is now cracking, and I'm getting water in the basement again. What do you suggest I do?
Did you not get water in the basement when you had the cement board in there, or the cement patch?
Yeah, it was in pretty good shape. Now I've got the cracks right up against the foundation again.
Okay, first of all, I would chisel that vinyl patch out, and I would put in one of two things. You could either put in that expansion joint. You can get a foam, closed-cell foam expansion joint and carefully put it in, but probably what might work better for that would be to take a tube. It's a tubular caulkbacker, and you can get them in different sizes, and you get the appropriate size that will squeeze down in there between the sidewalk and the foundation, and then you can buy a concrete, what is it called? It's a caulking that's it's very liquidy. It's got a low viscosity, and it will sort of seep into that crack. But be careful, because that stuff, if it gets on your sidewalk and starts to drip, it's an ugly mess. So put it on gently and, you know, make several coats after it sets but not cures. Okay. And that would help quite a bit. Have you ever put a level on the sidewalk to see if it's level or leaning towards the house or leaning?
Yeah, it's just fine.
It's just fine. Well, then that might do the job.
All right.
The tube caulk backer, is that a foam?
Yes, it's closed cell foam, and it's in a tube. It comes rolled up, and you can get it at any hardware store or one of the big boxes, although I always like to spend my money at the local hardware store. So.
Yeah,
just check the width of your crack, Steve, and make sure you check the specifications for the material you put in. Mm-hmm. The self-leveling urethanes that Ken is suggesting, like Sonelastic SL1, is a wonderful product.
And it's made just for that purpose.
Just for that product, but not for a real wide crack. Get a wider crack, you may have to go to something different. So make sure you go online and find out how suitable it is for the various widths. Also, read the instructions, because like the Sonelastic that Ken is suggesting really adheres better if you clean it and use a primer.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, so get a lot of information before you use it, but there are some really good products out there, and the self-leveling stuff is great. You can have an extremely professional-looking do-it-yourself job.
Mm-hmm. There you have
it. Guys. Thanks so much.
Good luck to you.
Thanks, Steve. Jeff in Brookfield, on to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have a old farmhouse that I'm looking to re-roof. It's like a 1916 farmhouse. It's the roof. It has layer of asphalt, layer of cedar shingles. And I'm going to have the roof opened up. The second floor area actually has, actually the real question is insulating in this space. The problem is the room or the ceiling of the room goes up against the rafters, so it's a very narrow space.
Right.
And it's the one time in 80 years it's going to be open, and I was thinking I should insulate it somehow. What techniques or what layering? I was thinking of blowing in, but then you have drafting or ventilation problems with the roof and vapor barrier problems, so should I just leave that space open because it's ceiling against rafter? What?
Here's what we did on a project not long ago, and it's been we've done this before, and it's been very successful. After we take off the roof, we remove the roof boards, and we blow two-part polyurethane, a closed-cell foam, into the cavity space, and then we replace the sheathing, and then roof over. You can do one of two things. You can either roof over the top, or you could, if there's not a very big gap, you can use what's called, I think it's called a nailing, an insulated nail board, which is a sheathing that's got extra foam on glued to it through a honeycomb gap, which gives you an air gap above that, and that way you can keep your roof cold. I'm not explaining this well. I could describe it in a little more detail if you need.
I think I understand what you're trying to say, though.
But if you can take off those boards and insulate it, you have to coordinate your roofer with possibly a carpenter, with definitely an insulator, and so there's a little bit of coordination issues there. But if you can get it scheduled, that would be a terrific way to do it. And I think, and then paint the interior with a vapor barrier primer.
Oh, okay.
And you'll be pretty satisfied.
All right.
And Jeff, you're going to put an asphalt roof on, so you're going to be putting a new layer of sheathing over the old skip sheathing.
Yeah, I knew I had to do that. I knew I was going to have to put a new sheathing on already because there's gaps in the board because it's old, it's old board. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is it right there. You use that insulated nailing
insulated nailing board is what.
Yeah.
I think that's what they call it. There's a couple manufacturers here in the state. There's one up in Wausau. Didn't he call last time we were on the show?
Cornell.
That's
company.
Cornell. Yes. Great, good memory.
Not only did he call, but he sent me a packet of information
and
all
too,
kinds of sample sheets and said, please say the word Cornell the next time you're on.
what word was that? What was the name of
Cornell.
That?
Cornell.
I don't know how large a donor he is, but if he's listening
hopefully
today.
Hopefully he's going to be a big donor.
No, it is a Wisconsin product that we have used, and it is
good
quality.
Good product,
and
yeah.
He said he's a big Larry Mueller fan, so he's got to be a good guy.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the call. Nancy in Fitchburg, we have a house built in 52, raised ranch. Foundation walls are concrete block. We wanted to use our basement as a family room rather than storage. Got one of the radon test kits at a local big box. Mailed the canisters. Received the results of a 6.2 PCI. This is above the 4 PCI standard. Are these mail-in tests reliable? What would you recommend to us as a next step in what appears to be a potential problem?
The one-day test kits are reliable as long as you can average them over 6 months. So you need to buy 182 of them. What I really suggest, Nancy, is you get a six-month test kit. Get an Alpha Tracker test kit and put it in from the middle of the summer to the middle of the winter. That will give you something reliable. We have houses that tested a 2 on one day and an 11 on another day. Mm. So these one-day snapshots, as I explain it to people, it's like somebody says, what's the climate of Wisconsin? You say, well, it's partly cloudy and 72 degrees.
Today.
Well, that's today. That is not the climate. So your 6.2 probably is statistically totally not significant. Fitchburg, a lot of Fitchburg is clay, unless you're in one of the sandy areas off of Osmondson. There is not a lot of radon problems in Fitchburg, though there are a few isolated areas. So I would go ahead and do the six-month test first if you've got enough time. Otherwise, you're just going to have to go ahead and assume the worst and spend a few thousand dollars on radon mitigation.
There's good news to the radon mitigation, though. If you do have to do that, it substantially reduces the water in your basement, the moisture buildup in your basement. And it makes it much more pleasant to have a living accommodation down there. So that could be a...
Could be a plus. Mary and Eau Claire, we're on to you. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a 50-year-old house, and I'm looking at replacing my basement windows. Right now, they're hopper-style windows and pretty drafty.
Okay.
And just looking for some advice. My husband says, you know, why do we need to have windows that open in the basement? Can we just use glass blocks? And
sure.
How good are they? Or I'm sure anything is better than what I have.
Well, we do that quite a bit. You know, what happens, you open your windows in the summertime and moist air gets down in there and then it condenses on your water pipes and you have all kinds of moisture issues. Glass block is a good way to finish off your windows, and it's not that expensive. You could get a you know, good quality basement window that's either vinyl or aluminum clad or wood aluminum clad, and then you don't have any exterior work to work on. So any of those would be just fine.
Yeah.
No reason to open a basement window if there's no reason to open it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Tim in Appleton, hello.
Good morning. Afternoon. I've got another problem here with my roof. I've gotten moss or vegetation growing on about one quarter of the roof that is facing west. Now, there's a huge tree there that blocks that particular area.
Yeah.
All the time. There's shade there all the time. Now, is this tree and the shade causing it, or is something else causing it? And what is the cure?
Yes, most likely the tree is causing it. It's staying wet longer, so moss is growing on it. The easy cure is to use a little zinc on it. You can buy strips of zinc, the purpose of which is to nail along the edges of your shingles. When it rains, a little bit of the zinc runs down the roof, and it acts as, I guess, would that be a herbicide, a fungicide, a something-acide, a moss-acide. And you should be able to find these strips. You should certainly be able to find them online. And when you re-roof, I believe that GAF now actually has a shingle that has some zinc impregnated in it to be used on areas that are shaded by trees or on the north side of houses. So this is a real typical problem, Tim. And of course, the moss will shorten the life of the shingles a little bit, but a real simple cure.
You need to take that moss off as much as you can, I believe.
You could brush it off with a stiff brush, probably.
Yeah, you've got to be careful about damaging. Yeah. You know, you think of these old farmhouses that had these sort of decorative ridges, metal ridges along the top.
That's what they were for.
Right. Those were zinc. They were a big chunk of zinc, and that helped keep the old wood shingles and the early asphalt shingles from growing a lot of lichen and moss and deteriorating.
And the new ones are easy to apply. It's just no problem at all to install them, so it'd be great. Also, everybody, keep your tree limbs, bushes trimmed away from your house at least 3 feet, and you will add a lot of life to your roof.
And one quick question here as we conclude. How much does a typical home inspection cost?
That really depends upon the area of the state and, to be truthful, the quality of the inspector. Mm-hmm. There are inspectors out there with tin cups, and I've heard of people doing $150 inspections. So you're really going to have to call around. What I'd suggest you do before you look for price is go either to the National Association of Home Inspectors or the American Society of Home Inspectors and see who in the area is a listed professional or a certified professional with them. That gets you one of the better people. Not only do they have their state registration, but they're spending a little extra money on more education and being a member of a national society. And then call a few and ask for a quote. But remember, just as everything else in life, if the cheapest was best, we'd all be driving Yugos.
All right. On that note, we conclude. Thanks, John. Thanks again for being with us today.
A pleasure.
Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, our guests today, and we'll have them back, of course, and we will we'll do this all over again. Just to remind you, Friday, Garden Talk, I'll be away, but Jim Packard will be talking with Molly Fifield-Murray of the UW-Madison Arboretum. It's their 75th anniversary this year of the Arboretum. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.